Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Donna Seaman. She is editor-in-chief and adult books editor for Booklist. She is a member of the content leadership team for the American Writers Museum and an adjunct professor for Northwestern University's Creative Writing Program, School of Professional Studies. And we're talking about her new book, River of Books, A Life in Reading. Donna, welcome to the show. It is such a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Thank you, Mark. I'm thrilled to be here.
When did this idea of that the only term I could come up with was a bibliomemoir come to you?
Like that.
When did that idea come to you?
Well, this was an interesting proposition because it came to me as an invitation to participate in a new imprint called Ode Books, O-D-E, like Odes to Books. And this was a small press venture associated with Seminary Co-op, which is a actually declared not-for-profit bookstore in Chicago. And I just couldn't figure out what to do. I didn't want to write literary criticism or, I don't know, I wanted it to be a story. I wanted it to be personal. I'm almost pathologically private, so it was a really strange choice.
Oh, my God.
It this way, yeah.
Because when you're writing a book like this, you're putting an awful lot of yourself out there.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so it was a shock. I struggled. It was...
I understand.
But I felt I really wanted to make the point that books are part of life for so many of us. And, you know, to really reveal that in terms of feelings and personal experiences, not just abstractly.
The first thing I thought of after I read the book was, here you are, professional editor at Booklist, and you do a lot of, you know, criticism of other people's books. What was it like to do this book, like putting yourself to be criticized by other people?
Oh, yes, it was nerve-wracking. I had to stop worrying about it. I had to stop thinking about it. Part of my decision to tell the story of how I ended up at Booklist was to kind of avoid writing about the work I do.
Yep.
It's so sensitive.
Oh, it only comes in at the very end.
Yes. There's so many people involved. So I felt I just could not get into any of that. I just had to put it out of my mind. I've had other books, so I've had, experience of being written about before. So I just thought, I'm just going to proceed, hope for the best.
It ends up being a marvelous idea. Like I find myself doing the same thing, like trying to list books at different stages in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And what this comes out as ultimately is this, the your books are like your Proustian Madeleines. You know, these book titles elicit all sorts of memories of different stages in your life.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. And it was, you know, at first I started making all these lists, of course, of books. And then I just realized I would know the ones that were just there, that are always there, that I could summon up. Because, of course, I had to leave so many things out. And,
oh, I'm sure.
You know, yeah. And as personal as this is, of course, it's a very small percentage of my life also. So I really went for the intensity and the lasting impressions for books.
Starting out just from the beginning, the first books you distinctly remember. And I love the story of this book of Chinese fairy tales. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Yes. This is where... you immediately face the fact that your memories are pretty unreliable, especially if you're reaching way back to your, preschool existence. I had this memory of this enormous book of Chinese fairy tales, and I thought it looked a certain way. And I looked for that book repeatedly and could not find it. I did finally unearth it deep in the basement of our family home, and it was very different than I remember.
It still sounded like a wonderful book.
It is a wonderful book, and I obviously loved it to pieces because it's, the spine is all coming apart. But I reread some of it also, and I thought, these are not that great.
Well, wait a minute. You're an adult and a critic, so obviously it's not going to be as good.
That's right. Although most other books I reread stood up, I had the same, you know, very similar feeling about them.
But what's fascinating is these books that you read early on, as you write about it in River of Books, they really form you as an adult.
Yes, they were my stepping stones into adulthood. They were my, you know, keys to the realm of adulthood, which I found very mysterious. And as I mentioned in the book, and I often say, I really disliked being a child. I was very impatient with childhood. I felt that we were always being pandered to or lied, basically lied to. And I wanted to know things. And books told me those things.
I've taught this age group that you were. And I have had a number of students that are exactly like you. They're the ones that their parents are always telling you to go outside and play, and you'd rather stay inside and read a book.
Exactly. Put down the book.
That's right. But you also had parents that were wonderful, that obviously encouraged you reading.
Yes. Well, they did. They just gave into it. I mean, they wanted me to read, of course. I think they might have preferred that I wasn't quite so obsessive about it.
You were reading cereal boxes and like labels.
It's such a compulsion and remains so. I have to admit, if I go too many hours without reading, I'm kind of jonesing a little bit.
I totally get it. But you know, it's amazing the way you describe books for you throughout the book, River of Books. It's books as solace, as rescue, as haven, as a way to escape chaos, and pressure, and you became this book-obsessed child. Also, you're subject to several horrible examples of anti-Semitism.
Yes, well, yeah, I think, I mean, I don't think really any women get through life without facing misogyny in one form or another, any minorities is the same. It just happens, and you have to deal with it, and it's shocking, but I had context for it, so.
Yeah. Now, your memories are not only of books in River of Books, but libraries.
Yes.
Talk to me about libraries.
Oh, I just love libraries. I grew up in Poughkeepsie, New York, which is a small river city, and it had one main library. And I just remember walking in there as a really little kid and just feeling like, yes, this is it. You know, sort of like when you walk in the woods and it's beautiful and alive. It had that same feeling of vitality to me and importance and, you know, even reverence. And the fact that, you know, you could just leave with books. You didn't have to buy things. There was no money transactions, no worrying about that. You were just free. You had this little card, and it just seemed magical to me. And I still feel that way. I went my local library branch the other day, and I had that same vision of delight, like, oh, I can just check out books.
I was always fascinated by the stacks.
Oh, yes. And you know, that happened to me the other day, as it always does. You go in, you might have something in mind, and then you end up wandering and looking.
Totally get distracted. Oh.
You get pulled into things.
But there's something about all the library stacks that I've been in. They're darker than the rest of the library, you know, and there's this like smell of dust on books, and you get the sense that there are these tomes in there that haven't been seen the light of day in decades.
Truly.
So there's a sense of discovery, and it's just a weird place to be.
It is, and it's true. You know, you feel like it's underappreciated. If you're in a big library and you're deep in those stacks, you're like, why do people not come here all the time? I need to check this book out so it has to get some fresh air and some fresh eyes.
There's something you mentioned in the younger sections of this book that I just broke up laughing because I hadn't thought about it until you wrote about it, and that was the Weekly Reader.
Oh, right.
Oh my God. I had that in my grade school, too. What? Oh, can you talk about it for people who don't know what that was? I mean, oh, my God.
Well, it was like a little sort of newspaperish magazine-ish thing for kids, and it was so digested, it was so condensed, and you knew it. I mean, you just knew it. You're reading this thing, rolling your eyes, like, oh yeah, right. a little insulting.
I know. I felt the same way. It was just like, oh God.
Yeah, here it is.
Now, you also were fanatic over Little Women.
Oh, yes.
You know, that happened very close to where I am right now. The Fruitlands, which is now a multi-museum in the beautiful bucolic town of Harvard, is where the Alcotts lived for a while, including Louisa May. And they were a weird community. They were, oh my God, I don't even get into that.
Yeah, Bronson was quite a trip, right?
Oh my God. I know a lot of people love Little Women, but I need you to talk about why that touched you.
Oh, I think Alcott just tapped right into this, you know, the yearning of, and I hope boys like this book as well, but certainly girls, you know, what it felt like to be young, to be part of a family that, you know, was struggling a bit, and what it meant to be a good person, you know, to do the right things, to care about things that truly mattered. I was just so touched by each of the sisters, and as so many bookish girls, I identified with Jo hugely. Yep. You know, the aspiring writer, the girl who loved, you know, was tomboyish, who loved to be up in her garret with her apples and her books. I mean, that was so me. And to find a book that was set in a different century and different place, and yet felt so vital and relevant, and I was entranced. And I've read it many times. It's just. And it's so amazing to me that Louisa May Alcott really didn't really want to write that book.
I know.
She was kind of talked into it. and what, you know, what perfect characters and perfect stories to encourage empathy, you know, compassion, generosity, you know, the celebration of femaleness, you know, the great mom and the sisters. And, yeah, it's just, there's so much in there. And it holds up, clearly.
Oh, yeah. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Donna Seaman. She is editor-in-chief and adult books editor for Booklist. She is a member of the content leadership team for the American Writers Museum and an adjunct professor for Northwestern University's Creative Writing Program, School of Professional Studies. And we're talking about her new book. It is an amazing memoir, River of Books, A Life in Reading. So, am I to understand that you read while you eat?
Yes.
Come on, Donna.
While I read, I know. What's this terrible, right? I
mean, well, is there a special kind of reading for while you're reading, or is it the same kind of reading, like you're just plowing through?
Same kind. I just, you know.
Well, you have to read for your job.
I have to read professionally. I have to read, apparently, just to, you know, survive. And you know, I love to eat, of course, but I think they go together really well, personally.
Well,
I find that a great combination.
I'm always underlining and writing things, you know, writing marginalia.
Yeah.
It's too complicated.
Okay. Well, it can get messy. I try to eat neat things.
So what kind of a student were you when you were in grade school?
Oh, gosh. I was impatient. Often bored students in grade school. I was, you know, the kind of kid that stared out the window all the time, or was, you know, back in the day, we had giant clocks on the walls. I was always staring at the clock. I was, found it tedious. I was bored. I did okay. I found some old report cards when I was digging through things. And I was the kind of kid where, you know, I was criticized for my attitude. The word potential came up a lot. I was a little rebellious. I don't know. I was, you know, one of the sort of the weirdo kids.
Oh, you had the classic rebellious drug years.
No, that, yes. Fortunately, that was not in grade school.
But still. It's like, yeah, you went through the classic bad girl. But what's funny is every sort of, I don't want to say phase because that's demeaning, but every segment of your life that you go through, your reading list either is putting you there or is following you there. So you sort of subject matter is like in spurts. You know, you'll suddenly fall in love with the environmental movement, and then there'll be all these environmental books. And I'm sure there's a lot more. But that is so funny. Did books steer you in these directions?
You know, that's a good question. I think it was a combination of the two.
Okay.
I think I was sort of I would become, obsessed about. I mean, I was the sort of kid at the breakfast table would be sitting there, you know, sobbing about the bomb. I was terrified about nuclear weapons, much to my poor mother's dismay. I've been reading, about the bomb ever since. I grew up on the beautiful Hudson River and learned that it was polluted. So I'm what? So I started reading about that. I was reading out of anger often, that feeling that the world, was being trashed before I was old enough to be able to partake of things. And, of course, that's true, and it's not stopped. But so I was led to books in those ways. But also, it would happen in the reverse, too, where I would discover things in books and get curious and proceed, in the other direction. But a love of art also steered me to books.
Well, there's a great section in the book of you in art school.
Yes.
Do you want to say a few words about that? That was fascinating.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's such a funny thing because people that I got to know later never would have imagined I went to art school because I'm such a bookish person. I seem like the sort of person that would have gotten an English degree and all that. But instead, I left public high school midway through and went to a John Dewey school.
That sounded fascinating. That was great.
Oh, my God. Paradise, right? It saved my life, really, literally. And there I discovered, much as I loved reading, I also kind of needed to be occupied. I needed my whole body to be doing things. And I just became very enamored of making things. I was really interested in weaving and fiber. I loved taking photographs and drawing, all those things. So because I'd had that experience, the thought of going back to classrooms just wasn't very appealing to me. My mother.
I could be reading a book.
Yes, exactly. I don't want to just sit here and listening. I want to be. And, just that ability to kind of be doing, just active, to be in studios, to be learning how to do all kinds of different things along with reading. So art school became my choice. I startled everyone in New York by going to the Kansas City Art Institute.
Wow.
Yeah, which was, a culture shock to me, but also kind of cool to realize there's this big country out there and really interesting people everywhere. I ended up in art school. I thought I was going to be in fiber arts, but this is very typical of my life. By the time I got there, they had closed their fiber department. They later reopened it, and I just was just back there, invited to do a residency, which was such joy. And I got a tour of their new, newish fiber department. It's fantastic. I would have loved it. But so be it. I stayed and became a sculpture student. So that was a very different kind of education. But I read the whole time I was there, both for courses but also for myself.
And then you moved to Chicago.
I ended up in Chicago.
And that your descriptions of what it was like to live in the city at that time are just really fascinating and fun. And Studs Terkel.
Studs. Oh, my gosh. I've been so fortunate. And so I came to Chicago. Really, the plan was just to stay here a little while and kind of regroup, maybe make a little money. Well, I never left. I was intending to go back to New York, but I did not. And I became involved in all sorts of literary activities here. Chicago's got a really very supportive, very warm, generous, inspiring literary community that has grown over the years. It was very small when I first landed here. But I ended up meeting Studs at, some event at the main library.
Wow.
And he was such an inspiration to me. I mean, much as I love writing, I also really love listening. And his oral histories, beginning with his books about Chicago, made such an impression on me. And he had that, he ran a radio show.
Well, he has a great voice. He has a great voice.
And a great curiosity and passion and nearly a photographic memory, I think. I asked him, I remember we were, at some event, and I was asking about people he interviewed. And I said, did you ever interview John Steinbeck? He said, no, he never did. And then he recited the opening paragraphs, which I happen to love, in The Grapes of Wrath, but he could recite them.
Wow.
Spontaneously, with a martini in front of him. So that was pretty impressive. So I was very fond of Studs, and he was very supportive of me because I had a radio show on a college station in Chicago for a while.
And what did you do on it?
I spoke with authors. I spoke to writers. I interviewed writers.
You're not doing that now, are you?
No.
Thank God.
But like you, I love radio. I just...
Oh, yeah, something really amazing about radio. We're going to run out of time here, and I was going to have you read something, but people need to read this book. But I want to talk to you about your final chapter because it's so important.
Yes, thank you.
River Without End. You really crusade in the last chapter against the banning of books and the importance of libraries. Can you just talk for a minute or two about that? Because that is so important.
Oh, thank you. I love the word crusade. Thank you, Mark. I've always been very aware of the precarity of our freedom of speech and freedom of expression, right? And I remember, because I've been around the Patriot Act after 9/11 when they went to public libraries and were demanding records of what people checked out, which are considered private, and librarians stood up to them. I remember doing an event with Studs Terkel, as a matter of fact, probably maybe around 2005 or 2007, at an American Library Association conference where he got up and told librarians what heroes they were to stand up to that sort of thing. So this has been a long, something I've been aware of and worried about for a long time, and it's getting worse now speak, worse since I wrote the book. I mean, I was writing the book when there was book bans and librarians being threatened and, people just completely, it was so orchestrated. It was so phony. Now, I was just reading this morning about that case before the Supreme Court about opting out.
Oh, yeah.
Parents don't want kids to be. And I'm just, my eyes get really big, and I get very concerned about this sort of censorship. That's the classic slippery slope into authoritarianism. It's so dangerous. The strengths of America, the strengths of democracy are public education, public libraries, being able as a kid to discover, free range reading, to be able to discover books, books about people like yourself, but books about people unlike you. It so enriches your imagination. It so makes you feel excited about being part of a larger world. That's all the best of us. And to see this so endangered now is really appalling.
Well, as I can quote you from your last chapter, you write that reading is thriving, and it's the path to freedom. That to be able to read a book, and hopefully several books, a number of books, a never-ending number of books, is really giving you the information you need to get the big picture, to really make your best in the world.
Yes, I deeply believe that. And, there's so many things competing with reading. I talk about the drop in reading skills. And
I read that article about college students can't finish a book.
Yes, yes. I find that just so alarming.
Well, part of it, it is the electronic revolution. Everything's in short spurts. Yep. And it is a problem. I'd want to be a Luddite about it, but...
Me neither. And I'm not.
You're not.
Technology, but I also would give some of that up to be sure that people could read books and spend that time. I always talk about it as a communion with another mind. That's necessary. That is how you grow and learn and forge deep bonds and your convictions in life. You want to live a meaningful life, and that's where you find it. And we were really lucky to grow up in a time, I was thinking about this so much, like the GI Bill after World War II, where all kinds of people could go to college. And yes, higher education has its problems, but it's also, those are the people's schools, the state universities, community colleges, and great people teach there. And, the humanities is becoming so misunderstood and undervalued.
There's a phrase you use, we should read adventurously. And I think I interpreted that as don't just stay within your safe realm of what you know. Pick up something you have no idea what it is about and read it.
Exactly, which is you know, what people are trying to prevent us from doing. And you should be open to surprise. You should be receptive to, you know, unusual ideas, new voices. Be challenged. But that's what you want. That's what you want. And it's safe. You know, those are safe experiences. You know, you can sit in your favorite chair and experience profound revelation.
One of the terms I always wanted to know what to call this that I read in this book is how you fell in, quote, book love with the young David Copperfield. And that's finally the phrase I was looking for an experience I've had, too.
Are you going to reveal?
No. I'm not crazy like you and putting it all out there. I'm the man behind the mic. No. Maybe off mic. Maybe off mic. I'm not putting it out there. What are you going to write next?
Oh, good. Thank you. So being the fanatic I am, I wrote twice as much as could fit in this book.
So there's a part two.
Well, there's a part two, I hope. Excuse me. there's definitely a section. I kind of went off on a lot of tangents, and one of them has to do with a professor I had in graduate school who I got really curious about and turned up some really what I think are amazingly interesting things. So that profile will be the first thing I turn to, but there's a lot of other things that were left out.
Okay, all I'm asking you is to write fast.
I will do my best, Mark. Thank you.
So we can talk again.
I would love that.
My guest tonight is Donna Seaman. She's editor-in-chief and adult books editor for Booklist. She's the member of the content leadership team for the American Writers Museum and an adjunct professor for Northwestern University's Creative Writing Program, School of Professional Studies. And we've been talking about her really enjoyable new book, River of Books, A Life in Reading. Donna, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, this is such joy, Mark. Thank you so much.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.